Thank you, Tara. Wealth of knowledge. And on the finishing of the sentences, I would like to finish every sentence, but it doesn't quite work out that way. And if you know Chairman Roberts, you'll know that scripting him is not the easiest thing to do, and it's almost futile. Christy can understand that. I'm sure she's heard plenty of stories. So thank you again for the invitation to be here. I got to say, when Mike Torrey first asked me to prom, I was a little concerned. But I figured, what the heck, let's give it a shot. So I know we have some friends who are journalists in the room, and I've got to say this, I know it's been told, but these remarks will be off the record. And the reason for that is one, I don't really have anything exciting to say, and I'm concerned about your readership. But two, I want to be able to answer some questions at the end, and the chairman will be here later this evening, so I think he's going to say some more poignant remarks than mine are. On the background, I appreciate the background trifecta. That's how I think of myself, certainly when I look in the mirror. But one thing you did forget, Tara is not shy about pointing it out, is I'm also an SOB, and that's a son of a banker. Before you draw too many conclusions, there. I grew up in a small town in Kansas, in wheat country, and my dad's an ag banker. That still is an ag banker, and. So I grew up in town, so I'm not a farm kid, and getting into ag policy was a little interesting for me. But my experience with agriculture was based on the lending side. And when it was a good year for the producer, it was a good year for the community, and certainly with the bank and my dad. And that's how I think about crop insurance. I mean, agriculture is part of this larger community. You know, first and foremost, it's about the men and women who put the seed in the ground, but it's also about that support system behind them to produce a good crop, and that's where crop insurance comes in. It's you help provide faith and optimism for the producer, and so thank you for that. I thought I'd start today or talk today about an overview of the Senate Agriculture Committee for those of you who haven't been to Washington, D.C. Talk a little bit about our successes and our activities this Congress of what we've done so far and what we still have yet on our agenda to do. And then I'll talk a little bit about what happened last fall and then open it up for questions. So the Senate Ag Committee, we have 20 members, 11 Republicans, 9 Democrats, and it's chaired by Senator Roberts. Now, my boss, the chairman, is the first in history to serve as chair of both the House Ag Committee and the Senate Ag Committee. He's also been the ranking member on both committees. So he's got a great deal of perspective. And I gotta say, it's a lot easier working for someone who's got that historical knowledge. My job's pretty easy. I have a great boss and we have great staff who know a lot more than I do. But what I like about the committee is that it's not just agriculture, it's agriculture, nutrition, and forestry. So we have a lot. We have a large agenda on our plate. We have a broad jurisdiction to get through. Of our members, we've got good bipartisan members. A lot of them will fight on other issues, Republican versus Democrat. But when we come to the Ag Committee, if you've not been, it's the smallest hearing room there is on the Senate side. We barely can get 20 members around that table. If you've ever been to a hearing, it's like having dinner at the Thanksgiving Day table. You are sitting elbow to elbow and shoulder to shoulder next to your colleague, which is interesting when everyone's a senator. But it creates that sense, again, that sense of community in agriculture. I think the policies that we work on the Ag Committee, we try to be more bipartisan. We might be a little regional. I mean, you can't have the Northwesterners and the Southerners getting together too often without robust debate. But for the most part, we try to do things in a bipartisan way. We have members from New York. We have members from Georgia, South Dakota, North Dakota, all throughout the country with different perspectives. But one thing's for sure is they have an appreciation for the men and women who produce our food and fiber for the country. What we've done over the last year, we've had some big wins. We've had some stressful wins that were probably a little too stressful than we all would have hoped. But we've gotten a lot accomplished in that bipartisan way. One of the things we've done, we did early on last year, was reauthorize the Federal Grain Standards Act and the livestock mandatory price reporting, which sound very sexy, especially when you're going up against Iran sanctions. Getting a good Grain Standards Act pass past really dominates the front pages of the newspapers. But we were able to do it in a way that yielded no amendments during markup. I think we marked up that bill in 7 minutes because of all the work that the members had put in. It was a good day. We went on to some more controversial issues that we were able to solve. That's country of origin labeling during the omnibus fight, and that's a debate that has gone on for 20 years. And as thankful as we are that we were able to avoid retaliation from our trading partners, that conversation is going to continue. Conversations about food, conversations about agriculture are going to continue, regardless of legislative wins. Most recently, we had a very successful bipartisan committee work on child nutrition reauthorization. So for any of you with children in school systems, you know, their school lunch or their summer feeding programs or the Women's, Infants, and Children's Supplemental Nutrition Program, those are all packaged into one bill. So we all talk about the farm bill every 5 years, and then when we take a break from passing a farm bill, we talk about child nutrition in the Senate Ag Committee, and that's also every 5 years. We were successful in getting a product out of the committee that many people thought we couldn't do. I think if you took a poll of folks who paid attention to our child nutrition programs at the beginning of last year and said, will you reauthorize child nutrition? You've got the White House over in this side. You've got School Nutrition Association over on this side, and they're both making very strong statements. You've got Chairman Roberts in one position. You've got Senator Stabenow in another position. I think that the smart money would have been on the committee not being able to produce a product. Not only did we produce a product, we did it by a voice vote. Again, we marked up, we took our committee action in 41 minutes. And the reason we were able to move so quickly, other than just a generous schedule in the Senate, was because we had buy-in from members. We had spent months at the individual office member level developing a relationship, listening to priorities, and that's how you win fights on the Hill. I mean, Tara talked about the opportunities for winning and opportunities for success. You have got to put in the legwork, and that's what we did. So those are some of our positives that we've gone through so far. Now, what's next on our agenda? There's more opportunities for success. One, we've got to get child nutrition across the floor and then through the House. Second, we need to reauthorize the Commodity Futures Trading Commission or the Commodities Exchange Act. And then soon you'll be seeing us taking on the issue of food labeling in regards to biotechnology. There's a lot of debate about what's going to happen as individual states pass laws mandating that food be labeled if they contain or may contain biotechnology. We're reaching a critical point in our marketplace that could shift very dramatically in the coming weeks and months, and so we'll see action in the Senate on that issue. So now let's talk about, I know you guys have heard a lot about last fall. So what happened? You know, how do we fix it? I've heard a lot of thank yous. You deserve all of them and probably more. So we talk a lot on the Hill about fire drills. This was no drill, and anyone who's spent time on the Hill can understand this was a real threat. You had let's start with the fundamental bill. You had a 2-year budget bill. Doesn't happen very often, folks. So just getting that large, massive bill, agreement around that was a major undertaking. And when you're part of the pay for, oh, that's rough. Immediately, when we found out, when Chairman Roberts found out, and we need to give credit where credit's due, Chairman Conway as well, they started talking to each other about how to fix it. How do we pull it out? What's the best legislative strategy, political strategy, to help folks understand what this cut, where it might not seem like a lot, $3 billion, would do to the program and what ripple effect it would bring with it. Those conversations started immediately at the member level. And at the highest level, it was conversations with the Majority Leader's office. On the House side, I know that Conway had conversations with the Speaker's office. And it was intense every day. Every day, my boss went in with a mission of working to get that cut out. And we were successful because of your work. I mean, it's only, members can annoy each other so much, right? But then there's always a reason to escape into your office. But one thing you can't escape is when you shut down a front office's phones because there are so many calls going in or there's so many emails that you crash the network. And that's essentially what happened when your grassroots advocacy went into action, is phone calls didn't stop, emails kept going in, and folks realized they had to address this problem. So I don't want to diminish the success here, because it's nice to say, we won one this year. You didn't just win one for this year. This was a major fight, probably bigger than a lot of the fights that we've seen in the Farm Bill, because it was such a condensed time frame. So you owe yourselves a big pat on the back. And unfortunately, there is an opportunity for those policies to come back in some form or fashion. We've all seen what was announced earlier this week by the president's budget, but with all due respect to the administration, we've got folks in Congress that we worry about a lot more when it comes to statements like that. We've got friends on Republican sides and Democrat sides who see crop insurance as a target. And so to help you in your advocacy, I want to give you a little bit of ammunition. I know Mary Kay's talked a little bit about the political environment. So when you next come back to the Hill, or when you next make those phone calls, or you're sitting in your coffee shop and someone's talking about boondoggle or cutting the fat, whatever it was. Think about this. All right, so the federal government over the next 10 years is gonna spend $51 trillion on programs. That's good size of money there. $51 trillion over the next 10 years. Programs under the jurisdiction of the Senate Agriculture Committee will total $1.2 trillion over 10 years. That includes agriculture. It also includes nutrition in our committee. So that's the SNAP program and the child nutrition programs. So of that $1.2 trillion over 10 years, SNAP and child nutrition makes up 82% of our budget. Crop insurance, 7.2%. Conservation, 4.7%. Commodity programs, 3.9%. So if you go back to that $51 trillion, ag and farm programs together, so ag and farm programs under the committee's jurisdiction make up 0.31% of federal spending. So next time you have that argument, someone says, well, we got to cut crop insurance, we got to trim that fat to balance the budget. I don't know. I mean, I'm a banker's kid, and I think we had to learn how to use a calculator before we were able to learn how to use a phone. But I don't know how you balance your budget in any sort of reasonable way by only cutting 0.31% of your expenses. And I'm not saying my dad's the greatest banker in the world, and I'm certainly a disappointment as a son if you just look at my math scores, but I can figure out that it takes a heck of a long time to balance your budget if that's all you cut over 10 years. So we try to provide a little bit of perspective for folks who are engaging in this conversation. It's fine, and Mike said it well. The program is not perfect. And the administrator talked about it earlier, improper payments. We're gonna have to figure out a way to tighten up the program if we want it to survive. So we've got room to work on the policy side, we certainly do. But the big non-surgical strike, the non-surgical cut to the program is not what's gonna help us out in the long run. Again, so before I open it up for questions, because I understand Jim Wiesemeyer's coming up next, and my boss is a former newspaper man, and he tells us a lot of things, but one is you never get an argument with a man who buys ink by the barrel, and I think now it's something about there's probably some correlation of subscribers on the internet, so I don't want to keep him waiting for too long. But before I open up for questions, I want to say, you know, thank you for all that you do. It's not just the thank you for coming in and helping us, especially last fall, with the policy cut, but it's thank you, thank your companies, thank your employees for what you do every day to make sure that that our farmers and producers out there can feel comfortable and feel optimistic about what they do for a living. Senator Roberts says a farmer would never put seed in the ground with the faith and optimism to grow a new crop, and you all are vital in supplying that faith and optimism to our producers. So thank you very much. Happy to take a few questions, Mike. Yes, Kansas University Jayhawks should be number one in the country. They will return at some point.
at Oklahoma.
Yes, thanks, Joel. So how can the crop insurance industry and our allies most effectively build new champions on Capitol Hill?
That's a great question, and it certainly highlights the need. Someone I was having a conversation with Reese in the back, or I'm sorry, with Robbie in the back, and we've come up with a new idea that we will make sure I get this right, and I want to give you credit because this is going to catch on. We're going to write children's books about the value of crop insurance and the value of ag programs, and then we're going to litter them all throughout nurseries and daycare centers across the country. So that's our long range plan. So it's a tough, and I wish there was a silver bullet, but let me provide another story. So when I first came to Capitol Hill, I was fresh out of undergrad, and I got a degree in political science, and it's okay, it's not real science, I'm aware of that now. So I had a degree in political science, and I came up to Capitol Hill, and I was a staff assistant / Agriculture LA, the legislative assistant, because I was the closest person to agriculture who worked in that office. And I remember the first ag meeting I took was actually with one Mr. Michael Torrey. I had no idea who he was. And he came in and he was spewing all of this dairy knowledge on me. And I was just, kind of like holding along for the ride, because after 5 minutes of dairy, I mean, what do you, I mean, come on. So after the meeting, I remember looking, I was like, I got to learn up on this. If I'm supposed to be the ag LA and this guy's coming in just to talk about one issue, and there's so many broad issues in agriculture, I've got a lot of studying to do. So, I think I studied dairy for a day, and then somebody else came in talking about something else, and then I don't think I've studied dairy since. However, it's important to get those messages in early on the Hill. So where we are on the policy side is making sure that when an issue comes up like what happened last fall, and members who don't pay attention to crop insurance, they're going to turn to their staff and say, well, what do you know about this? And if they can say, oh, well, I met with these folks, last spring. This is what I know. They help build that foundation of knowledge for them, so they can then turn to their boss and provide some information and hopefully point them in the right direction. So I'd say it does. As far as the policies work on the Hill, it starts when there's not a crisis, and it's making sure that you can kind of lay that groundwork with the offices, that they know who you are, whether it's visiting with members from the House when they come back and do district meetings, or senators when they come back to the state and have, speak to the Rotary Club. It's making sure you get your message out there as often as possible. So that's what it is on our end. As far as new advocates on your end, I'd say it's extremely helpful if you can tell that message of community. So when you come up and talk to the office, or when you build that message out, don't just think about your companies and your employees and the agents. Think about your customers. Think about your customers who are customers of other folks in the rural communities, and bring in that message of, well, this is a community that relies on a successful agriculture, a successful rural economy. I mean, the farm economy is going, I don't know if you saw the numbers last week, the farm economy is going down. We're hurting. Down 56% since 2013, net farm income. I mean, you're living it out there, and you'll see it. So bringing in that sense that, these aren't just one-off policies. You can't just cut crop insurance and expect everything else to go well. It's interrelated in the farm economy. So I'd start with that message too. Try to grow your community of support.
We have one back here, Joel.
In your opinion, what's the largest issue our detractors focus on?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part.
What's the single largest issue our detractors focus on?
Overall spending. So as the Farm Bill has changed, from one where commodity programs, Title I programs made up the bulk of spending, to where crop insurance is now, it's the biggest target. And it's not just detractors of crop insurance, it's detractors of ag policy. And so we've done a good thing. It's okay to be successful. The policies are now, they're written better. You all are delivering them better. And that's going to bring participation into the program, which is good. But that also brings the federal expenditures up. And so when you gain popularity, when it's a more expensive program, you get there's more attention paid to you. I mean, you can only, you know, with what was it, 3.9% of that $1.2 trillion is the commodity programs. There's not a whole lot you can go after with the commodity programs. They'll try, but you've got 7% in the crop insurance. So that's why they're looking at you now. They think that there's a big pot of money out there. And somebody brought up, I thought, very poignantly in a meeting with the senator maybe last week or the week before, you know, we still have the word subsidy. You know, it's so misleading, right? I mean, the word subsidy is in the law. It's not a subsidy to the producer, that's what it sounds like. So when people hear the word subsidy, they think it's a bad thing. So maybe that's on us to think about how we write laws a little better in the vocabulary that we use.
We've got time for one more question. Anyone else? All right, Mary.
There's been some discussion at the meetings, people worried about the potential of the ag and SNAP being split in the farm bill. So in your opinion, how realistic is it? And if it is a big concern, what should we be doing now strategically to plan for that rather than being bombarded at the last minute?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. The great thing about being a staffer is I don't have any opinions, so I just you know, spout off what my boss's positions are, and that's it's a question that comes around, and so folks who have a little more experience than I do know that we've been battling this question for a long time, and every so many years, and certainly during the Farm Bill discussions, it gets brought up, but it's been a successful union, right? So I think it's tough to want to break something apart. That has been successful like this. You have different caucuses in the House. You have different members who feel strongly about one or the other, and you know, it's tough when you try to go it alone. I mean, I think if you look at the House of Representatives, and I don't know any numbers, and I'd love to just spew some off to sound smart, but we'll talk later, and it won't take you long to realize I'm not that smart. But you have a number of members in the House who've never been to a farm, you know, so that as congressional districts change and shift, they're concentrating more and more around urban areas. And that also has to deal with population growth and population decreases as well in rural areas. So I think it is dangerous if you split those apart if you're thinking about a successful farm bill. If you look at how many votes were cast on the Senate floor over the last year that we've been under this new majority, and then you look at votes cast on the Senate floor in the previous 4 years, yeah, we have a great success story about, we've got a lot of votes in the Senate this year, but over the last 5 years, there are not many bills that actually get to the floor for a vote. I mean, this last farm bill took 3 years to do, and it had a failed vote on the House floor. I don't know that we'd be in a better position either on the nutrition side or on the ag program side if we both tried to go our separate ways.
Joel, thank you for joining us. I know you're going to be around today and this evening. Please join me in thanking Joel for being a part of our program.
My pleasure.